Okay, this meeting's being recorded. This is the Nederland Fire Protection District Board of Directors regular meeting, September 2nd, 2020. So we can start with roll call of those present. Ian Owen Powell, I am present. Patrick Richards.
Present.
Todd Weisler is absent. Unfortunately, he had a mountain bike accident over the weekend, so he's unable to join us. Ray, are you present?
I'm present.
Henry, are you present?
I am present, and I hope Todd's recovering fast.
Think he's working through it is the best way to describe. I also hope that he recovers fast. Chief Dare is absent. We have board quorum. I'm going to call this meeting to order at 19:08. I make a motion to approve the meeting agenda that I sent out. If you need to add anything to it, let me know. I'm happy to do that. Do I have a second?
Second.
Ray, do you approve the meeting agenda?
Sure. I haven't got to it yet.
Henry.
Yes, I approve the agenda.
Are we in a position to accept the previous meeting minutes as written?
Ian, are you asking to accept the meeting minutes from the regular board meeting and the special board meetings to be approved?
Yes.
Do you remember on the special board meeting that I wasn't able to attend, I wrote you a statement previously before the meeting, and I wanted you to read that
I
as
did.
a
I apologize. Okay.
You can add that
We
to it.
cannot approve those because I didn't get to it. I'm sorry. But if we can approve the 5th and the 12th, the 5th for public information, there was a problem with the recording, so the minutes were from memory. I supplied those to the board. I believe they are fundamentally correct.
Is your recording working now?
The recording is working now, or at least says it is. So.
Awesome. I don't have any real comments on those meeting minutes. I think the ones you quoted from memory, I think that follows the meeting pretty well. I made some notes. I cross-checked those. Seems about right.
Yeah.
I don't know
Okay.
what's missing on the recording, but so it goes sometimes.
Patrick, were you okay with the minutes for the fifth
I
and
am.
twelfth?
I agree. They looked accurate from what I can remember.
Random font change. We can come back around to the 19th next month. So before we start, I'd like to make a statement. And I also suspect other directors may wish to make a statement. Obviously, it's been a busy 2 weeks on the board. I'd like to take a moment to speak about the events of the last 2 weeks. There is a lot I cannot say, but I will address some of the questions that have been raised. The first question that was raised a lot was about the operational ability of the fire department. The fire department is operationally intact. The shift officers have many years of knowledge and different skill sets amongst them. The volunteers that we have supplement those skills with their incredible support. When I checked on Sunday, we had run at least 22 calls since the chief was put on administrative leave. Second, but this should really should be first, everything that's occurring is a safety issue. Firefighters die doing the right thing all the time, and usually it's avoidable. And I've read a lot of NIOSH reports on firefighter deaths, and almost always there is a reason why it shouldn't have happened. We must talk about our mistakes and learn things. If we do not, one of us will end up dead or injured. Ask yourself this question. Would you rather see your firefighters in the 4th of July parade or attend their funeral parade? That's not a difficult question for me to answer. It's one that's very deep to my heart. It's one that I ran for this board on. And just to back that up, I'm going to read a passage from a book that I just finished reading, which is called Managing Risk in the Volunteer Fire Department. This is basically page 10 before we get to this stage. So the author of this book is a 40-year veteran of the fire service, writes books on risk management, writes books on how to manage and run a fire department. Very well respected. He says, in the early 2000s, I attended the funeral for a volunteer firefighter. He was 29, with two small children and a pregnant wife. I stood at attention on a bitterly cold winter morning, directly across from the church, watching his coffin removed from the back of the hearse. I saw only one thing. His wife, supported by family and able to button just one button on her winter coat because of her pregnancy. It was heart-wrenching. The following day, she gave birth to their third child. This image and this message are forever imprinted on my mind. I share this story because the town didn't do the right thing. There was no life insurance policy. After all, he was only a volunteer. People from across the country donated to an established family fund, and donations were generous, but not enough to support the family as the children grew. The family asked the town for an annuity that would provide health insurance for them until the children were adults. At a town meeting, the town officials and the townspeople voted them down. Do you really think your community would be different? I don't think so. People vote for their pocketbooks and not necessarily the right thing. In this case, the following year, the state's governor had a bill to assist the family brought forth and passed. Thankfully, but can we all count on that? So I'd just like you to think on that as we're probably going to get into some contentious territory in this meeting. And that's what this is really all about. Not personal grievances, not settling scores. This is about the safety of our firefighters. I get nothing from doing this job, and I'm putting a lot of work into it. Ray and I have just spent 2 days this week conducting interviews. That's a lot of time and effort. I put in the time and effort to ensure that I don't have to go to a funeral or look someone in the eye and say, I'm sorry your loved one is dead because we did something stupid we could avoid. If you think I'm angry, you're absolutely correct. This town sent me to Fire Academy where they taught me to be safe. And then this department fails to provide adequate training and support to back that up. And I've mentioned that a lot this year. I mentioned it before I was on the board. I've mentioned it since I've been on the board. And it basically underpins every reason that I'm here. Previous boards have failed to listen to people who matter. This department has no safety violation reporting policy, especially when it involves the chief. In fact, most grievances end with the chief, and that's ridiculous. That's just completely wrong. Those of you who are pushing back against the actions of this board need to ask yourselves the question, is why are we doing what we're doing? Moving forward, I guarantee that this department will no longer operate in the this is how we've always done it. I have 30 years of experience, or we are different up here mentality. That mentality will kill firefighters, and we could no longer accept that. If you, as the people of this town, think that it's acceptable to ask your firefighters to place themselves into unacceptable risks, then ignore their concerns, then you have no soul. And I would recommend that all of your firefighters should consider where their loyalties lie. To this board and those who preceded, where are your loyalties? I will tell you where they should be. Number one, and I've said this before, it is the safety and welfare of your firefighters. They are your most important thing. Number two, providing the taxpayers with the service they pay for, which is a well-trained, well-supported, highly motivated team that saves lives by taking reasonable, managed risks with theirs. Consequently, I commit that this board, under my leadership, will adopt and commit to the Everyone Goes Home program and the 16 firefighter initiatives that underlie that program. No compromises, no excuses. This is a program that's been around since 2014. This shouldn't be news to anybody. We should be doing this. We should have been doing this for years. And last couple of weeks, well, last couple of months, basically underpinned that we are not doing this. Finally, Henry, you've made it clear where your loyalties lie, and every firefighter in this department knows it. The letter that you wrote to the Mountaineer was incredibly disrespectful to everyone in the department. And personally, I have no idea how you dare show your face in here again. That's all I have to say. Any other director has anything to say, you can please chime in now.
Right. Well, listen, Ian, I was thinking about making a statement, and I think I still will. And listen, I appreciate your and the others' concern for the safety and health of a firefighter family. There's no question about it. The discussion does not have to be contentious, Ian, but it has to be real. And I think we're missing some of that from especially from you and from Patrick. So the couple things that I thought were, for me, important to make a statement on was, first, I wanted to respond to some of the outrage on the various social media platforms about my recent statement on the support of the fire chief. Now, if you think that I categorically support anyone just on principles and without reason, you're wrong. That's just not how I operate. I'm supporting the chief because the new board has brought a handful of allegations, some of them weak, against him without any real proof or results so far. I mean, some of them have been dismissed, some of them were just not true, and some of them just ended over. So I think until due process is done and we have a clear and unbiased result of these allegations, I will maintain my support for the current chief. Now, when I was told about some of these posts, I do not participate in these. I don't respond on social media, but I'm aware of them. One of the allegations in particular made me pause, and I personally do not care about the district and its firefighters or safety of all involved. And I think you just made that clear again, that this is what you think. Now, I mean, I took that pretty personal, and I thought it was rather inappropriate and tasteless, since I'm also in about my 20th year of serving the district, and I don't think that's a measuring stick, but I think it shows my dedication to the district. And if you, and when I'm saying you, I'm referring to the people that have posted these allegations. I mean, if they really believe that I or any other current or previous board members do not care about the district or its firefighters, then I think you guys seriously need your head examined. I mean, that's just not how this goes. I mean, any board member that I've been in contact with, safety, the care of firefighters, the care of our firefighter families stood always on the very top of the priority. Now, I think as a conduct, just because we agree on issue, like, we don't have to have character assassination on social media. I think it's in poor taste, it's immature, and it will certainly not help us sorting out our differences. Now, And I cannot accept, and nor should the rest of the board, this kind of poor public behavior, especially from members of the department that go out there on social media and trying to do these, you know, poorly worded responses or posts. Now, and I don't know how this works, but I want to remind the people that I'm still a director of the board, and as such, I'm a representative of the employer, and that these verbal assaults, I don't think in any other company that would not be tolerated, not in a public or private entity, and would have severe consequences if somebody would, you know, make statements as such that I have heard were made on whatever platform, probably Facebook, I'm not sure, something like that. So, excuse me, there was one of my statements. The other statement, and I was thinking about that too, it doesn't sit well with me. This is regarding the promotion of the shift captains to operational chiefs. Last week, Ian, I think August, mid last week, maybe, I can't remember, August 23, I believe it was, the members of the department, myself included, we received all an email from a shift captain about a variety of different issues. But then somewhere in there was noted that per Ian and Patrick, the president and vice president of our district, the three current shift captains were instantly promoted to operational chiefs. I did ask you on the same day that email came out, Ian, about clarification on this development, because I was completely shocked and unaware that this has even been in the makings. There was a discussion, a motion to make such a significant decision for the department without any professional or complete board input. You know, my request still gone unanswered this day. I know you're busy. I know you have a work life, and I don't expect answers right away, but I will probably expect an answer within a week time. Kind of brings me again to the point that both Ian, you and Patrick, two-fifths of the board, are you guys are acting in kind of a vacuum, like overstepping your authorities of the district board. And in fact, you guys are ruling as the judge, jury, and executioner again, which is a tremendous violation of any district policies and any chain of command, you know, in our district. Now, what I want to know on this particular issue, making these shift captains operational chiefs, like what kind of vetting process and research have you guys done with these individuals so that we know that they meet the criteria of being promoted to a chief's position? Which then actually also brings me to a subsequent question is like, it's interesting to me that you can make a critical decision like that with such far-reaching consequences in less than a week, but it takes you guys 2 months to investigate the current chief safety allegation. I mean, I'm just, that's somehow that struck me pretty odd. The timing is completely off. What I also want to know from you guys at some point, and I'm sure you don't mind sharing, like what promises were made to these individuals in regards to what happens when the chief returns back to work after that punitive 2 month suspension? Or is that already just a foregone conclusion that even before a reasonable review, the current chief will not be allowed to return? I mean, is that just an assumption you guys are making? And then lastly, what I want to know on that topic is that if there were any discussions or promises made to these newly promoted operational chiefs and pay increases or any other incentives on the district. So, Ian, I do think, I know we can make this all work. It's contentious right now. We have our issues, we have our differences. I do think that with all these current actions that the new board has taken, I do believe we are exposing ourselves to potential unnecessary legal actions. I can see this happening, and I can see that there could be some action taken at some point from not just from a couple of members, from a variety of members of the district. Now, I think as a function of these, in my opinion, obvious violations of the board's obligation, I want to request that any further investigations that involve the fire chief are appropriated and completed by an unbiased third party investigator. I think part of that is happening, but I also want the current board not to preside over these investigations. In addition, I also think that I'm thinking about asking for the formation of a citizen oversight board, which I think I remember years ago there was a question about that, but I think a citizen oversight board may actually provide good additional support and supervision for the current board. So these are the kind of things I wanted to make a statement of in public. And I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay, a lot of questions there. I'll answer some of them because I only got some of them. So what vetting process did we go through? The shift officers pretty much day-to-day run the department. This department has no succession process, has no deputy chief. So when the chief goes on vacation, the shift officers take over. If the chief was incapacitated, the shift officers take over. There's no other way to do that. They got a massive 0% increase in their pay for this, and they stepped up instantly to fill the void and work to keep the department being operational. What promises did we make them? None at all. Not only would that be immoral and unethical, but basically would presuppose, which you obviously think is already presupposed, the outcome of what we're trying to do here. So whilst it's described as an investigation, Ray and I basically have just interviewed 9 people who were present on the scene of this incident. I think, Ray, it's up to you whether you want to agree or not. We discovered a lot of things. Some of them are pretty shocking. If you want to go for a citizen oversight board, knock yourself out. I don't have an issue with that. I will back every claim that I've made. I'm already reaching out to Denver Fire to talk to their advocates where everyone goes home for somebody to review the findings that Ray and I pick up. And it's not really the findings, so I want them to review the evidence. Which is currently running about 16 hours of audio. Because I don't want people to accuse me of this being a witch hunt or a whitewash. And I'm pretty sure that the membership will tell you that that's not what they want either. Any other questions you'd like me to answer?
And I might also add, last I saw all three of their state certification, that actually exceeds the job description for the position of fire chief. So that too was also considered in whether or not they're capable, along with exactly as you stated, the fact that they are operationally responsible for the department in the chief's absence, whether he's on vacation or you know, just taking a day off. They're tasked with that on a regular basis prior to any of this. Henry, I do have a question, though. You said the number of investigations, none of which were real. Could you give me some examples? Were you referring to the hostile?
Yeah, it was a hostile environment case, which was pretty quickly dismissed with the idea that we ought to probably investigate, you know, or at least internally review potential toxic environment.
Well, quickly dismissed. That took a month to set up.
On that topic, How other than getting a third party investigator, how did myself or Ian cause that?
Well, because I think we had that discussion during a board meeting that I was a strong supporter of probably not getting that investigator involved. I eventually, after further discussion, I finally said, sure, let's go and have a proof that the chief does not create a hostile work environment. But I think from what I understood from the little information that was provided, I did not see a hostile work environment.
And you're right. That's exactly the investigator that we wanted to, well, that we brought in, certainly determined that. Ian, is there a way that we can actually make that report public so that everybody can understand that it wasn't a hostile work environment?
No. So the way that those investigations work is that in order to protect the complainant, the investigator is employed by our attorney, which gets attorney-client privilege between them. And then our attorney explains the findings of that. Now, every board member was given the opportunity to talk to our attorney about findings. I don't know who if any of you did, I did. I spoke to him at great length. I think I had a 3-hour conversation with him. So to say that it was quickly dismissed and that it wasn't properly investigated really shows that you didn't go and talk to the attorney, Henry.
You know, you guys have brought up insurance fraud and financial fraud by the chief. None of that has gone anywhere because everything that you guys asked from the chief, he has supplied and supported. And you guys have just made it very difficult for the chief to operate in a fair environment.
We didn't bring that up. It was in the complaint.
You guys have provided some, you guys have set really high expectations. I'm okay with expectations, but once those expectations become somewhat unreal and not being able to fulfill some of these expectations just so that that the chief can be proven wrong or can be proven that he's not capable of doing his job, I think it's that does not sit well with me. So, okay.
So which expectations if we raised you think are unreasonable?
I think you guys made it pretty clear on the purchasing agreement. I wasn't all against that. I mean, we had a purchasing agreement. You guys just put it in nicer words, I suppose, and made different amounts. But like, for example, how you had the chief, make copies of all receipts for Patrick's review. I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I think like,
by the way, Ian, he never provided any of that.
Yeah. Why would he? I mean, you have the receipts with every purchase.
Because I asked for them. That's how it works. If you ask for something, every time you've asked something from me,
yeah, but
Henry, I've replied to you.
Making it impossible for the chief to run an efficient department with all these requests.
So provide the receipts.
Yeah, and you guys have meetings with the chief and you know that you guys you ran over him on other issues. I don't even want to get into it. I think I made my statement. I made myself clear. I know you guys have a different view of this. We'll figure it out and we'll move on.
So can we, is it easy to agree that at least providing a safe environment is a reasonable expectation?
Absolutely. I have no problem with that. And again, I think for you guys to accuse the two current members of the board and past members of the board that we didn't do that is awful. I mean, that is completely awful and untrue. And I take exception to that, Patrick.
Well, Henry, why did it take so long just to get trucks checked? In fact, I've got the list right here. And we'll probably get to this later on, but 5601 finally just came back, so the fire engine. But we have 5617, the ladder truck there. I can certainly go through the list, but it does not pass the DOT inspection. It has a power steering hose leaking. It also has rear brakes that need to be replaced. 5642, and we talked about this in a past board meeting. It has cross members that were cut out. It was so far beyond repair that we all decided that it's best to put it out of service. That did not pass DOT inspection. 5603 needs new pitman, or it says pitman arm is loose. This truck does not pass DOT inspection. These things didn't happen in the last 4 months that we were elected to the board. Some of these things look like they've been around for issues for quite some time. 5641, I think that just went down today or recently. The water tender, a drag link. That truck needs that to pass a DOT inspection. So I think that a lot of this stuff, certainly either you didn't know to look as a board or didn't know to ask. I wouldn't think that anybody would want to operate or allow a firefighter to operate trucks that don't even pass the DOT inspection. Those are all safety issues they're looking for.
Right. And you know as well as I do that the chief made these work. He was working on these things.
No. They're working on them after we asked them in the very first board meeting to start doing that.
Patrick, you know that's not right. The chief has always been working on trucks, and yes, there are priorities on trucks, and I know you can justify that with the safety of the firefighters, and yes, I mean there's no question about it. If a truck is completely unsafe to operate, it shouldn't be operated, and I'm pretty sure the chief didn't do that. But there are instances in our community when you have to make do with the means that you have. And look, I don't think the chief operated with completely unsafe equipment.
No, Henry, you're missing the point. We weren't talking about the chief. You claim that I made the disparaging claims about you and not believing in the fact that you take firefighter safety seriously. And so I'm replying to that. And the board hadn't done anything up until about 4 months ago when we were elected and asking the fire chief, which he did, and he's following through with, this has nothing to do with the fire chief. I was discussing these topics about, you know, about the board. And like I said, I'm not sure why. Maybe the past board didn't know to ask these questions or didn't realize that some of these items needed to be taken care of. But technically, there's still trucks that should not be driven because they're unsafe, according to the mechanic, the DOT inspector. So they are being repaired, but this is just a fact. This, I didn't make it up. This is a third-party mechanic. He's the one that came in and inspected these trucks. And if we had our own private business and we stopped at a state patrol inspection, they would make us pull some of these trucks over off of the road and red tag them and have them towed. So yeah, I'm serious about safety too.
Good. I think we all agree that we are all very serious about the safety of our firefighter family. And I think whatever
what you said, that was what you said in February, Henry, when we brought up the safety of all the vehicles and nothing happened until
now. Well, I think for you guys to allege that the previous board or previous boards did not have the best interests of the firefighters in mind, I think that's categorically wrong.
Then what actions have you taken to demonstrate that?
Ian, I don't want to get into a match with you on that. I just don't.
I asked the question.
I know that you apparently have better answers to all of these questions and issues. So,
okay, I can leave that there. Any of the other directors have anything they'd like to say?
This is the first I've heard of promotions being handed out.
It's not promotions being handed out. This is just...
Well, job title change.
Sure. We altered their job titles to reflect what they are doing currently. When the chief returns, their job titles return to their regular titles.
Why wasn't that brought to the board? The rest of the board.
I don't have an answer for that.
So it was just arbitrarily done?
Yeah, they're handling day-to-day operations.
Say that again.
If you drop them into an ICS system, it would fit for the role that they are carrying out.
Say that again.
If you drop them into an incident command system, an operational chief would be the role that they are working under.
Well, I personally believe that should have been brought to us for a discussion. I mean, at one point you accused us as the previous board operating in the dark with no transparency. Mm-hmm. And I see this being the same. Go sit down. Go.
So, if we're going to be hung up on semantics, and there was nothing promised, there was no pay promise, there was nothing other than taking care of day-to-day operations.
Well, that's what I was told, that they were going to do the day-to-day.
that you guys make decisions on behalf of the other board members that we may not agree on. That's not semantics, Patrick.
Well, that role hasn't changed.
You heard my questions, right? I think I asked three or four questions on that issue.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to respond to this now, but I think I would like to have a response at some point on like what this is going to look like when the chiefs come back, when the real chief comes back and takes his department over. Then we have technically four chiefs sitting in our department.
No, they were never in, and that terminology is chief. They were not promoted to chief. Not well, that, even close to that. They were to handle day-to-day operations, and there's only one fire chief, and that's Rick Durr.
Right.
And so they're to handle day-to-day operations, run calls, make sure that the volunteers have what they need, make sure the trucks are checked and in service, ready to go, make sure that everything is supplied, make sure that everybody has the training they need. That's what their responsibilities are. And that's not any different from any other day of the week.
That was their responsibilities before.
That's right.
So what was the urgency of making them operations chiefs when they could have just fulfilled that same responsibility in their current role?
Like I said, I don't recall the term chief being in there. They were handling operations.
Oh, the email, I think, was pretty clear. It said operations chiefs.
We'll have to take a look at that.
And for some reason, I don't seem to be getting these type of emails.
Okay, you should be, because you should be on the members list, but I can check that.
So I take that would be a district distribution list for all or just firefighters?
Should be all. It should include the board.
Well, I'm not receiving them.
Okay, we can fix that.
Or I probably would have piped up much sooner.
Okay. Criticism accepted. I'll take that one.
So does that also mean that we've given them fiscal responsibility for the budget?
No.
Are they making expenditures?
They're making expenditures as they need to continue working, which so far had been minimal.
So they're checking with you before you spend a dime.
Yes.
And then you're okay with it? Or?
If you want to hold a board meeting for every dollar they spend, that's fine. I can do that. I have the time.
Well.
But there are some operational expenses that just occur. The department still needs to run. And if the board wants to make every decision for them, then we can do that. I have no issues with that.
Well, I have no qualms with that.
Okay. Any further board comments?
Well, as sure as I think about this, I'll come up with more.
Okay, give me a second here. I just lost the email I was looking for. So moving on to public comments, I have one statement sent to me by email I can read. If anybody else would like to comment, chat me, and then I will put you into the list and we can work through it. Just quickly, an email from Dave Bryan. Said, I'm very concerned about putting our chief with over 20 years experience on leave in the heart of fire season. We are given very vague information on who is in charge. Was this thought through? Shouldn't someone have been brought in with adequate experience to cover the position to get us through during this investigation? Making the shift officers in charge during a critical time like this, critical time like now, seems negligent. They may be perfectly qualified, but the community is not familiar with their skills to act as chief and should be very concerned. I also am hoping the investigation will be done by an independent resource. With the rumors that have been going around since over the last election, an internal investigation, depending on the conclusion, is going to leave many skeptical. And then if there is some kind of board packet for the next meeting, I'd appreciate if this email could be included. Thank you for taking the time to read. So the answers to that is, I too am very concerned about putting the chief on leave. This is a very complicated situation. Like I said, there's a lot of things I can't talk about. The chief is employed by the board, which means that anything the board does can become basically a public record. So when we discussed this with the chief, he had the option of making the initial conversation we had private or public, per the Colorado open meeting laws. He elected to make it private, which means we can't talk about anything that we said in that meeting. We can, and the minutes can be released now. We can talk about the public sides of that. So there's two public sides of that meeting that occur. There's the decision to hold the special executive session, and then there's the decisions that come out of that discussion. In the special executive session, the board can make no decisions that they then just basically bring out and rubber stamp. So it's a kind of a very complicated way to work. Our shift officers are incredibly talented individuals who have between them nearly 50 years of experience. I don't think anybody would have put them in charge if they didn't think it was a good idea, not necessarily a good idea, if it was necessary. Like I said, we have no succession policy. This department's had no deputy chief for 8 years. So if the chief was incapacitated tomorrow, this is where we'd end up. So this actually reveals a fairly significant problem in the way that the department is operating as well. Working on the investigation side of things, at the moment we're just trying to establish what happened on this incident. And I think Ray will verify that it was a very complex incident. There were lots of moving pieces. There were lots of mistakes made that we need to learn from. And the fact the department has no policy to deal with this is a problem. So there's nothing that says, hey, when somebody comes forward and says, I've got a massive safety violation that I want to talk to you about, there's no way to deal with it. So it's very difficult to put in place something, a process, really quickly that happens. The only process we had was for disciplinary issues, which this is kind of a mix of. And that was to form a two board member committee to investigate. In that process, the two board member committee makes the decision and the decision is final. I don't agree with that. And I never have done. The reason it's done as a two board member committee is because then it can be a private session. Or sorry, it's not a public session because we don't have a board quorum present, which generally means that people are more willing to come forward and talk about their experience. As I said earlier, I've reached out to a couple of resources in Denver Fire. I'm going to ask them to look over the interviews and what we find and see what their opinion is on what occurred. And given that generally they work with the Everyone Goes Home initiative, I suspect that they will have a few opinions. I understand the skeptics, and I understand that you may misunderstand the motives. I would rather not be standing here with the chief suspended or on administrative leave, however you want to describe that. It doesn't gain me anything. It's basically gained me a few sleepless nights, a couple of lost vacation days I could have used to do other things that I'd rather be doing. So Dave, I hope that answers your questions. I know I answered your email and you followed up with an email, and I have a follow-up for you that I'll mail to you later. It's just been an incredibly busy week. Agenda. I've got a couple more people who'd like to comment. Just give me a second. I'm going to pull this over. I had a request from the members to provide a statement. I apologize. So if the members who wanted to make a statement, wish to make a statement, please do so.
Is there somebody about to make, or shall I go ahead?
Yep, I'm on now. Sorry, this is Lindsay Sweeney. I had to move to a different room. All right, let me just pull up our letter. All right. So my name is Lindsay Sweeney. I'm a fourth year volunteer for the department. And this is a letter from a group of our membership. The Nederland Fire Protection District volunteer membership supports all life safety investigations and the actions the board is currently taking. We support our current leadership. We support our officers and members that hold many years of experience and certifications. We hold them accountable to the same standards that we hold ourselves to. We are there for our community on their worst day, and tonight we ask that you put our life safety as your top priority. We're members of the community, taxpayers, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, and we want coming home to our families to be something our community cares about too. There are inherent risks we take as firefighters and EMS providers, but we hope that we are not the only ones who want to work to mitigate these risks where possible. Our membership spends countless hours training, obtaining certifications, and running calls for the community. This is time away from our families, loved ones, and all the things we do in life. We also need to feel supported by our board and community telling us that our safety is valued. We also support the board and officer instituted changes, including updated training plans, better tracking of member certs, reinstituting the platoon structure, vehicle inspections by qualified heavy vehicle technicians, reduction in surplus vehicles, reduction in out-of-date items at the fire stations, updating medical storage with NARC policies, checking apparatus for expired medications, creation of 5652 as a quick response vehicle, improved trainings, truck safety checks, new onboarding policies, recruiting changes, and monthly operational meetings. We would also like to recommend to the board that the board contact other agencies that were involved in the NEDPD AAR, such as the County Bomb Squad, DA, and County Hazmat Team to better understand the criticality of the call we had and risk exposures. Sincerely, Lindsay Sweeney, EMTB, Structure, Firefighter 1 and 2, Hazmat Ops, Wildland Firefighter 2, Swift Water Rescuer 1 and 2. Andrew Jocelyn, EMTB, Structure Fire 1 and 2, Hazmat Ops, Wildland Firefighter 2. Bobby Swanson, EMTB, Structure Fire 1, Hazmat Ops, Wildland Firefighter 2. Ken Kehoe, Structure Firefighter 1 and 2, Hazmat Ops, Wildland Firefighter 2. Alex Olivas, EMTB, Structure Fire 1, Hazmat Ops, Wildland Firefighter 2. Eric Abramson, Captain, EMR, Wildland Firefighter 1, Engine Boss, Hazmat Ops, PIOF. Anthony DeSalvo, AEMT, Structure Fire 1 and 2, Wildland Firefighter 2, Sawyer, Hazmat Tech, Blue Card, Driver Operator. Jamie Carpenter, EMTB, Structure Fire 1, Hazmat Ops, Task Force Leader, ICT-4.
Thank you for that, Lindsay. Just to answer one of your questions in this, yes, we are going to reach out to the County Bomb Squad, the DA. I already have NEDPD. I spoke to one of those present today, and they have the other ones scheduled for next week because they're out of town for a while. So there are, and that's part of the complexity of this investigation, is that we have people who are out of town, we have people who are deployed in wildland fire, and they generally go away for 14 days. And a lot of the concerns, well, the primary concern, wasn't properly understood until very recently. And certainly the severity of it wasn't really understood. As soon as I understood it, I took the action that I felt was necessary. Thank you for your statement. Nancy, could you make a statement?
Thank you. So first, Ian's statement at the beginning of this meeting sets up people's imaginations to believe that the alleged safety violations for which the chief has been put on leave are egregious and horrifying. The public can't refute this because we do not have access to information about what actually took place. However, it's irresponsible to make these implications when facts cannot be made public at this time. Furthermore, the things Ian actually suggests to be problems are related to safety policies that need to be revised and are created to keep firefighters safe. Creation of such policies is not solely the responsibility of the chief, and these goals can be accomplished in collaborative and cooperative ways that respect the expertise and positive intentions of many skilled individuals. I am trying to understand the trajectory of how the NFPD has gotten to where things stand today. There's some howling happening in the background, if you can hear that, I apologize. I have reviewed the board meeting minutes from all of 2018 and 2019, and I found no indications of complaints, concerns, or personnel issues until early 2020. There was one mention in 2019 that morale was not perceived to be a problem, indicating there may have been some larger discussion of this topic. There were also a tremendous number of mentions of Chief Durr participating in efforts to raise money, as well as other members of the department, participating in efforts to raise money and address safety concerns such as improving fire codes and addressing the need for egress from Big Springs. In January 2020, at around the time the current new members of the board would have been filing nomination papers to run for the board, there's a run of critical and contentious public comments. Two of these were made by the current president and vice president of the board. There's also a comment by Ian indicating a wish to find ways to move forward and work together. Later comes a sequence of allegations against Chief Durr, first a hostile work environment, which was dismissed by an outside investigator, and now allegations of safety concerns that are currently under investigation. So my questions are these. How did things go from 2 years with no mention of issues or concerns to suddenly numerous serious complaints and allegations? And how does the current board intend to move forward from the contentiousness of the current situation in order to make improvements and effectively utilize the tremendous skill set and experience held by numerous members of the fire department, including Chief Durr, so that the department can attend to the primary concerns of the safety of the community? Finally, I would like to express that Ian choosing specific people to review the findings from the interviews about the alleged safety violation is not the same as an independent investigation. And I want to support Henry's statement regarding the need for a citizens oversight board. Thank you.
I'll address this for you. You should review the board recordings for 2019, specifically specifically September, possibly it was either July or August also. How did this go from being absolutely fine to this? Nothing, things have not been absolutely fine at Ned Fire for a long time. There's always been inner turmoil. It's not entirely unusual in volunteer fire departments. You have a lot of very diverse people volunteer. They come from different backgrounds. They have different expectations. But they've not been dealt with. How do we move forward? We move forward by talking about it, by bringing it to the open and being honest with ourselves about what's going on. I honestly wish we could talk in more depth about what has occurred.
Ian, can I jump in for a second?
You may.
Just a brief comment on for Nancy is that before the new board, we were basically told there's no access to the board. The buck stops at the chief. And if we were to contact the board around the chief, we would be insubordinate and possibly terminated.
Can you believe that?
That's what we've been told, Ray.
And I mean, that's a policy manual.
I don't know how you could possibly believe that, Charlie.
That's what we've been told for years, 4 years. Ray, I'm not making stuff up. I've been associated with this department for 22 years.
I've been there I was active 25 years. I sat in on board meetings. I did a lot before I even became a board member. And there was never any indication at all that we couldn't talk to the board. And then when I become a board member, I guess at that point I wouldn't know what is that kind of conversation, but I just can't believe that you believe that.
I have been flat out told that. So I'm not trying to cause an uprising here or anything like that. I'm just answering to one of Nancy's questions is what the difference has been. And that was the difference. So that's all I wanted to say. I didn't want to add any more than that.
You agree with Nancy in the fact that policy development not only as it pertains to ICS or incident command system, how to run your incident and safety procedures, that can't take a backseat to anything. And we need to make sure that all members know and understand the policies. And we've already touched on that in the past and making sure that we have some sort of almost clearinghouse way to make sure that all members have read and understand each policy that is developed. So I think that needs to happen sooner than later. And certainly there's an older policy manual. There are a few things in there that certainly still may be timely, but it does definitely need some updating.
Well, it was basically stolen from Boulder Rule.
Yeah, so that policy manual you're talking about really is the employee policy manual. It's very different to an operating guidelines and policies manual, which we had conversations about in February and March. That I have to say the membership were underwhelmed with the board's response to that. And then COVID, so everything just went off the rails at that point. As for not independent, then what would independent look like to you, Nancy?
So I would first suggest that the entire board needs to participate in the selection of independent investigator.
Okay. I don't have any issues with that, but you've got to go and find one. So unless another board member wants to stand up and go and find an independent investigator, that's generally been falling to me. I don't have an issue with that. It's a very long time. We hired
someone in the human resources.
It was employment compliance solutions. And the problem with this is it's a very technical issue. It's a fire-based issue. So you're gonna have to, if you want an independent investigator, it has to be somebody from the field of fire who does basically accident investigation. That's what we'd be looking for. And that's what I'm trying to get through Denver Fire.
So
why we hired that company?
If you mean the human resources company, no, we hired that because of all the, basically to bring our employee manual back to compliance, which it almost certainly is not. As you said, we stole it from Boulder Rural probably 20 years ago. So that's out of date. Also to alter the way our internal HR works, which is pretty unsatisfactory in the way that it escalates and then everything stops at the chief, even if the problem involves the chief. That's like, basically means if you have some kind of issue with the fire chief, you're done. And the way the policy manual was written, you are done. Because if you go around him to the board, you would end up being fired. As for the investigation itself, so as part of it, the interviews themselves will be transcribed, anonymized, and then we can probably make them available to people who want to read them. Have to redact quite a lot of stuff because there were some conversations about things that are part of a legal investigation. And there was a question, Tyler Smith asked me, I'm not sure if it's in context with the investigation or not, but he said, I agree with the need for civilian oversight. The board is civilian oversight. If you disagree with the way that it works, then you have recourse for that. The statute allows for a recall if you wish to do that 6 months after the election. I heartily recommend you don't do that. I think there's a lot of problems in Nedfire that have been hidden for years, and I think we can fix them, but brushing them under the rug and not talking about them isn't the way to do it. I served with Nedfire for 9 years. I don't want to be here disparaging them or the chief, but I won't go to somebody's funeral knowing that I could have stopped it, bottom line. And we're not just talking one issue here, it's a long running problem. Any other questions? So actually a question from Helen Davis is, because there seems to be a lot of communications problems, would you ever consider having a meeting where the entire fire department meets with the entire board with a mediator involved so everyone understands some of the problems and people can freely talk about issues? Absolutely. I have no issue with that at all. I would welcome that. Timing-wise, at the moment, that would be difficult. We have a lot of things going on. But yeah, we definitely should. Could, because it seems there's a disconnect here somewhere. And yes, Nancy, Chief Doe would be part of that mediated conversation. There's no point in having it as the whole thing without the chief involved.
Ian?
Yes.
Hey, it's Karen. I've only heard the last little bit of this meeting because I was on another meeting. But I really like the idea of getting an outside investigator to come in and look at this. My main reason is that this could ruin Chief Durr's career. And he's, you know, put a lot of, you know, of himself, his time and effort and his life into the department. And I think that before we have, you know, other people make up the decision, I really like the idea of getting an outside person who has no investment whatsoever in the department.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Thank you.
At all. As I said, at this stage, we're really just trying to piece together all the different parts, which is pretty much what an investigator would do for us. And obviously charge us a considerable amount of money. The last investigation cost us about $3,500. Whilst I don't want to spend that much money, I would do it. If we can get at least understand what happened from everybody who was there, then we have at least some of the story for the investigator or some of the narrative for the investigator.
That's a good idea. You know, have some of the groundwork done.
Yeah, especially what we didn't, or I didn't communicate that very well. Again, this comes down to the lack of any policy about safety, and particularly complaints about safety, not policy about safety. We definitely have some policy on safety. Nancy, you can unmute and ask the question yourself if you feel I'm not muting anybody.
Yeah, I'll just say what I wrote into the chat, which is it's likely that an outside investigator is going to have to conduct those interviews themselves, which means that they're going to have to do it over again. So it seems like, while it seems like a good idea on the surface to be collecting some information, and, you know, ideally maybe that would make it cost a little less, but the fact is they're going to have to conduct those interviews themselves to be able to be sure how the interviews were conducted. So this seems to just delay getting to what needs to be done.
So all of the interviews were recorded and an investigator would have access to those, but I take your point.
Karen believes we're not qualified to do this.
In what way?
So, Ian, my thought. is, if this comes down to a lawsuit, which it seems like everybody wants to sue everybody these days, are they going to come back and say anything about that the people that started the investigation aren't qualified? I guess I don't want you and Ray to be liable for anything. And I'm sure that you'd be covered by the fire department. I just don't know specifically how all that were to work.
Well, we are bonded.
And I just yeah. know that the toll that this has taken on Ray, it's been pretty hard.
I appreciate that only too well. The board has the board is there to provide guidance in these matters. I wouldn't say that I'm qualified to make a decision about all of the information I've heard necessarily. You could argue that. Which is why I would like to send it out to somebody else. But if you're saying, Nancy, I appreciate your saying it just delays things. Finding an investigator would delay things even further. If there were no complaint, then that would just make this last longer and longer. It's a pretty difficult place to be. I'll fall back to if in the last 20 years of the district, somebody had made a policy about this or thought about this or followed what are generally acceptable guidelines, we probably wouldn't be here today. It's a pretty grim place to be.
So Ian, you are suggesting that you know, if there were no complaint, obviously everything would be over. However, your following statement about, you know, not being here implies that there is something to be investigated, that you're going to come back from these interviews likely with something that needs to be dealt with. We as a member of the public, we have no information about this, so I can only guess. But considering where you started this meeting in a way that certainly intentionally or not, causes people to imagine the worst, which is unlikely to be the case. But nevertheless, people wonder. It seems that there seems to be some inevitability in terms of it needing to go to outside investigation to ensure that this is being conducted by people who are impartial and who have the expertise needed to be able to assess what actually took place. And so to some degree, it seems inevitable at this point that conducting the internal investigation is delaying. You know, yes, it'll take some time to find an outside investigator, but if that's what needs to happen, then waiting longer to start that process isn't helping anything.
Yeah, I would describe it as a rock and a hard place, and you can see it from both sides of that. It's very difficult for me to say anything in any depth or detail. This is the difficult part of working within a special district and in a public entity in Colorado. There's a lot of things you just cannot say that you need to say. And I wish I could.
So Ian, maybe this 2 months time period that you guys allowed yourself to manage this process may not be that bad of an idea after all, if we actually have to bring, or if we want to bring out these outside investigators to make sure there is a due process on the outcome of the investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Patrick, quick question. Castle Rock, do they have an investigator that, or is it your fire investigator that does this stuff?
So I said it again, Ray Burka.
So that we, I guess I'm trying to understand, an investigator that would look into safety violations or an investigator that looks into human resources and stuff like that. But, the city has a separate human resources, and then they'll investigate anything, obviously human resource related. And then if there is some sort of violation within the department, what the violation was, it could certainly be handled by a battalion chief, an operations chief. And then we also have our fire marshal's division, which we have one investigator there that is a certified explosives investigator. So I'm not sure, Ray, if I'm answering your question or what you're looking for.
Well, this particular thing has been it's growing to be so complex that I'm just not sure how outside entities handle their internal investigation on the entire, I mean, I know that's part of the debriefing.
Mm-hmm. The part of the AAR.
I'm not familiar with these AARs because I never did them. We just went back to the station and talked it over.
Yeah. So if we had a safety violation, it would certainly be addressed in the AR. If it was something egregious, that would be addressed. If it were a firefighter, the company officer, the battalion chief, and possibly the operations chief would certainly look into it. If it was, something that was a misunderstanding resulting in the safety violation, I'm sure it would be documented. And if the firefighter, owned it and said, yeah, you know what, I screwed up, I did this. If it was, an egregious enough safety violation, there would be some sort of disciplinary action. And then it would be taken care of and he or she would go back to work. And the documentation, if they do it again, then there's certainly the punishment will be harsher the next time. But generally, they don't do it again. I think I can speak collectively for whether it's Cass Rock or Netherland Fire or my chief or the chief here. People don't show up to work wanting to break the rules. People don't show up to work wanting to do something unsafe. Now, sometimes our emotions get the best of us, and sometimes, we don't make the perfect decision. But I think that at least in Cass Rock, what they're looking for is, does this member that made the mistake, possibly a safety issue, do they understand what the issue was? Do they own the problem? And can we move forward? So to say that we have one person specifically, Ray, that does that investigation, no. Do we have a group of people that would be asked to do that? Yes, we do. And that would be the superior officers typically.
Yeah, that's up the chain of command.
Yeah.
Patrick, are we certain as the board of the Fire Protection District, are we certain that this issue could not have been handled just the way you described it, with an internal quick investigation about what was the issue, where did we fail, how can we make better, and are we taking responsibilities?
Henry, that's the way I would really prefer this to be handled in the future. That in my mind is the best way, right? Is, yeah, you know what? Nobody's going to be perfect. We can certainly try to be, but when we make that mistake, are we really going to own it and say, you know what? I did it. I screwed up. But when, you know, stories don't match and it's something that is serious, but when we have, you know, it sounds like differing stories, then I suppose an investigation needs to happen to get to the bottom of it.
Ian, quick thought. That AAR that came out, can you send me a copy of that?
Yes.
Can I confirm that all five members of the board do have the information about what the alleged violations were that took place?
They do. They had them for the September 19th meeting. Sorry, the August 19th meeting.
Okay, thank you. Great.
Sorry.
Look, Ian, at the end of the day, we're here. We're tasked to make this department better, safer, make it work smooth. And I think that's what we got to do, right? I mean, this is not...
I agree with that.
This is an issue, but this is not a... I don't think this should lay the tone for the next, you know, 6 months of our life at the department. We have an issue. We're going to deal with it. We'll make it right. And we'll move on.
Henry, I agree with you. That the faster we can deal with this, it needs to be done fairly and accurately. And then everybody goes back to work and move on.
And I think Patrick, it becomes important that we as the board do this correctly, because there is some question about the process, right? So we heard from people. I questioned the process a little bit. Just, I want to make sure this is a very unbiased process to get to the result. And I think we need to acknowledge that, and we need to find a way to make this exactly that process, so that the result, whatever the result is undisputable.
I'd agree with that.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, I haven't heard a treasurer's report yet.
Is it
that far?
Statement, or are there more people wanting to make a statement?
Hey, Patrick. Hey, I'd like to address the email that Henry was referring to earlier that Ray said that he didn't get. I was the one that wrote that email. And I have, you know, it saddens me that, A, I feel like there are certain members of the board that don't feel that the officers don't have the ability to handle the day-to-day operations or act as interim operations chiefs. I can tell you that one of the three officers has actually been a chief at a adjoining agency in the area. You know, it kind of bums me out that we're kind of hung up on that you know, I said, you know, that we're being called operations chiefs. And I think that's just, you know, I mean, that's just because that's the role we're fulfilling, because when people call on the phone or ask you on scene, where's the chief, or I need to talk to the chief, well, somebody's got to be acting at the time. And so, you know, we're the chief of the day or acting as the chief, you know, the chief of the shift. And, you know, I can tell you that I've been with this department over 20 years, you know, and other officers have been with the department for, you know, more than 15 years. And I can tell you that Rick Durr, he's done a lot for me. He's, you know, he's molded me in certain ways. And, but I can tell you that he sure as hell didn't have the experience that most of the officers did when he became chief.
Nor did I.
Right. So, you know, I was there when, you know, Rick left the day that he was put on leave, and it was kind of a hairy day, and we had to fill some gaps. And if the way I wrote that letter it, or wrote that email leaves a bad taste in Henry's and Ray's mouth, I apologize for that. I thought I was doing the right thing, and you know, we're killing ourselves to make all this work.
Charlie, I do not question your ability about running the department in the capacity of an operations chief. I don't question that. What I'm asking is, what's their due process? Because that's a big step. I mean, that is in, I know Patrick says it's semantics, but in a way, being promoted from captain to chief, I mean, that's a big thing, and it should not go unnoticed. And in any other department, there are processes on vetting people that want to become a chief or that are becoming a chief. So all I'm asking for is, like, this seemed awfully fast. Was there any process of vetting these applicants to make sure that we're crossing, you know, we're making sure that we're taking care of all the questions that we would have on any other application that, you know, you can answer, and at some point probably answer in a very positive way? I just think that all happened very fast. There was no communication, no transparency, and it left a lot of people guessing why this happened and how this happened.
Henry, Charlie, I can tell you that
I know you're a good EMT paramedic, so I don't question you on that. I question the process.
Well, Henry, what I was going to say is that there was no process of me going from firefighter to engineer, from engineer to lieutenant, from lieutenant to captain. There was zero process. There wasn't even an acknowledgement. All of a sudden, one day I had a different badge in my locker, and that was the end of the process. So, I mean, I appreciate the severity of it. But, you know, I have to say that, you know, I've been working pretty tirelessly the last couple of weeks, as so as my other officer, you know, the other officers there, you know, and it just, I think it just sucks. I mean, the whole thing sucks all around, and, you know, we're just trying to pull our weight. And, you know, it just felt to me the way you said it, that, A, we couldn't handle it, and B, you know, why do these guys have the right to say that? So I am the one who wrote the email. I am accepting that responsibility. If I understood it incorrectly, then that's on me.
Look, I appreciate you saying that. And I know in the heat of the battle, you know, things get said. I have pretty thick skin, Charlie. Doesn't affect me all that much. And to you, in no way did I mean to imply that you or the others don't have the capacity to run a department at a higher position, maybe as chief or operations chief. I question the process.
Okay, and I don't really, and like I said, I don't think it's a process. You know, I don't think it was meant to be a process. I think it was meant to fill a void at the time that it was needed. And, you know, I really believe it should be left as that. You know, I don't really care. I mean, if you want to call me firefighter, that's fine. Call me firefighter. I'm happy to do that. You know, as Chief Durr says, titles are cheap.
There was no board communications on this.
I understand, you know, and I wasn't even supposed to be at work that day, Ray. I was far, you know, far away from the district when, you know, Ian called for help. And so I was able to fortunately be able to step up. And when we had that conversation, you know, there, we were just trying to fill the void. So
I just believe there should have been some board conversation about it.
All right. Well, that's all I have to add on that. So apologize for butting in.
And okay. And I thank you for your service.
Thanks.
So any more comments?
Hi, this is John Scarf with the Mountaineer newspaper. Can I know who was just speaking?
It was Charlie Schmittman.
Charlie Schmittman?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Now is it time to move on? Ian, is there any way to make that bigger?
Oh. I was unmuting myself to cough there. So it's, apart from all the other goings on, it's been an interesting month. Our administrator was out for a week, and our bookkeeper has been out most of the months with the family bereavement. So the fund balance sheet as it looks currently is mostly accurate. So this was made middle of the month, but included all the payroll, which is really the big expense for Ned Fire. So I'll just run through it quickly. And obviously, our treasurer is currently laid up in hospital, so he didn't have a chance to do his presentation. So I just picked this up. So in savings, we currently have $722,000.66, $11,730 in checking. Our capital reserves, $24,675, bringing our total funds to $758.42, which is, I believe, reasonably healthy for this time of year. Excuse me if you can hear the barking in the background. Capital reserve is 24,667. Our grant match reserve is 25,000. I'll get to that in a moment. Our reserve for payrolls remains the same at 106,902. The reserve for sick and vacation still the same, 79,196. The reserve for water systems, 49,402. Our TABOR reserve, 29,760. And our reserve for wildland fire reimbursement, 2,624. Bringing our reserved funds to 317,553. Our outstanding expenses currently at 17,432, that's where the difference is really going to be, because there will have been some more expenses that came in And I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But our total unreserved funds currently is $422,486. So the last time I looked at, ran the forecast sheet, we were still horrifically over budget on our vehicle maintenance. That didn't get any better this month. So in total this year, we spent $27,000 on engine one, $15,000 of that in the last month doing a major axle repair that became apparent when it went in for a lesser repair. Any questions on the budget?
I have a quick question on the sick leave. Does the new laws that are being passed around the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, are they going to affect special districts as well? Do you know that?
To the best of my knowledge, yes, they do. I sat in on a special district webinar about a month ago, and they were discussing those in there. So yes.
Okay.
So we need to discuss that at some point. It doesn't necessarily affect us until 2022 because of the size of organization, but we should start planning to implement that in our budget for 2021 to make sure that we're covered.
Right, it becomes a reserve in our balance sheet.
Yes, I would assume it would, because obviously we become liable for the, I assume you're talking about the changes to sick leave and vacation policy for part-time staff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the same page. Okay, yes.
Thank you.
Give me a second. Ryan was going to do the operational report for us. Unfortunately, he can't make it. He had to go and help his daughter with her homework. Give me a second here. Obviously, Jim was out for a chunk of the month, so he was unable to provide me with the nice call stats that we had last month. As I said, 5601 is back and it's repaired. We sent 5641 down yesterday. It came back today. It's now repaired. And 5617 has gone down for repair. The 41 repair, we don't know the number, but the fact we got it back in a day makes me feel slightly better about it.
Ian, correction.
Yep.
5617's down. 5641 is still in station.
41's been down and came back. It went down yesterday, came back today. 41. We're getting them both done this week.
So it's returned?
Yes, it came back today, this morning.
It was there today.
Yeah.
17 is gone.
Yes. I'd just like to quickly thank Charlie for organizing that and getting both of those vehicles down and back again, particularly on his days off.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We're just about caught up. So it's just 5603 that needs some work on it. And it looks like everything else has been brought up to speed and is in good shape. Is that the take?
Yeah. So everything that was found in the DOT inspection in station one specifically will now be done once 5617 comes back from its repairs.
I think one needs front tires.
So did you say 5621?
Yeah, it needs front tires.
Yes, I got that. That's further down my list. that I would get to that, yeah.
Do we have a total so far of what we spent in vehicle maintenance?
Yes, you know, give me a second.
5601 was about $27,000, you said. Is that right, Ian?
Yeah. Yeah, well, currently we are running.
Note says that we're 8,000 over. And ongoing repairs to engine one.
Yeah, Cody, hang on. Give me a second there. So vehicle maintenance budget currently, when reported, was 41,787. We sent a check to Keita Trucking today for another $7,000 for engine one. So that brings us to 48,787. It was $7,000 and some change. 27,000 of that is engine one, I believe. I can confirm that when Cathy gets back. And for a comparison, I believe the vehicle maintenance budget was 40,200.
So we're 8,000 over that.
Currently, and I think the prediction for that, if we continued to spend as budgeted, would come in about 29,000 over budget. Like I said, because the Cathy's gave me the reports beginning of the month or middle of the month, I haven't been able to properly update the prediction and calculation worksheet. So running a little bit in the unknown there. But we are most certainly over budget there. But generally, we're running either to budget or under budget on other items. That over budget is eating into our contingency fund quite heavily.
At some point, are we going to have to think about reallocating some line item budget items to cover this?
Yeah, we certainly have to do some reallocation with the contingency. Other items, I hope not. I'm hoping we can make it through this year. First of all, without any more major vehicle issues. And then the other items are running reasonably under budget or to budget. But I'd anticipate next month. Again, once Cathy gets back and gets up to speed for us, gets us up to date, then we can have a look at that and see how we're going to, if we need to reallocate. Because also at this point, I didn't get the report of any of how much property tax income we got. So it's very hard to really make sense of all of these numbers. Or make them all add up. So it's easy to make sense from them.
We have two trucks left to go?
Yes. So 17 is being repaired, and then there's 03 that needs some repairs. It's my understanding that 17 was not anticipated to be a large repair. One of those you never know till it gets there. My report from the shift officers, I'll just read this as is. So from Quartermaster, the gear closet has been cleaned out. Gracely past service life gear has been removed from service for disposal. Such gear represents a liability to the department and promotes a false sense of inventory. Gear has been pulled back from trainees and a member who have moved on. This is actually giving us a better sense of what we have. For budgeting purposes, attaches a spreadsheet, which I believe I sent to the board, of what it costs to outfit a new member for different types of service. We'll need to make quite an investment in gear for next year. While we may be able to use some of our current gear, we should plan on buying more. Current NFPA standards are very specific about sizing, not mismatching equipment, and service life. These rules are being enforced by the Boulder County Fire Academy, which obviously means if we want to send our firefighters to Fire Academy, we have to abide by those rules. In wildland, it was a pretty busy month. We had a lot of wildland firefighters out on deployments. Most are currently back, but I expect them to go out again. None of our equipment is listed as available. While sending our firefighters out depletes our local resources, it is income for these members. Some of them are counting on this paycheck. I estimate that the Timberline Type 6 we provided crew for made approximately $23,000 for Timberline during the 20-day assignment. We should consider finding our own engine to send out, and I know there's been a lot of conversation at board level last year about that, and certainly within the department, about whether we could do that. Captain Abramson has volunteered to work on this project. We may be able to obtain a used vehicle that can be used as a springboard for a deployment program. We are already staffing other agency engines. Might as well see if we can deploy one of ours. I suspect that to be an ongoing conversation. On the grants front, there's been no movements on any of the grants. Some, if not all, have been delayed by COVID and fire season. In recruiting, not sure I got this document, rough outline attached of a redesign of applicant and recruit face for the board to look at. I'll check to see if I can find that and send that to you guys. Working on fine-tuning, worked with Geo on updating current number of potential recruits, discovered that we have 10 that have just been waiting on action. Some have been waiting for more than 6 months. Also learned that the initial contact phase is not being handled well, mainly due to the lack of any form of process. This is being fixed. New recruits are now getting through backgrounds in days versus months. New recruits are starting to get involved in trainings. Again, we'll need a sizable budget increase for training and equipping, for equipping these folks. I do not believe we can equip them with out-of-date equipment in good conscience. We need to make it the appropriate training available to them as well as a path for advancement. But this process is moving. So we're trying to move recruits through and keep them interested. Part of the problem in our current recruiting process is that it's unacceptable to have somebody waiting for 7 months, particularly when we're in a position where we need new trained volunteers. So I will, once Ryan gets the redesign of that finalized, or if I've already got it, the draft, I'll send that to the board and we can all look at that. So that was our operational report for this month. Any questions?
The 10 applicants, they're still moving forward through the onboard process, and then what you're saying is you're holding off on any additional new applicants until the first of the year. Is that right?
Yes, I believe that's the case. And 10 is a lot. I believe we can handle that, and we can utilize them to work on our initial internal training. The process.
Ian, I just want to understand this better. This, you're not taking that upon yourself to work with these applicants, right? I mean, that's clearly chiefs or somebody that the chief appoints to do that. We're just providing the guidelines and the processes.
So at the moment, Ryan is working with them in order to keep them interested in the process.
Okay, thank you.
We have applicants that have been around since March, and but no, I am not. Any other questions? Okay, moving on to old business. We passed the resolution last month to sign the contract with the Human Resources Organization. They are coming in tomorrow to sit down and meet the shift officers and explain process to them. The vehicle maintenance updates. As Charlie said, 5621 needs new front tires. Estimated cost is about $850. The front tires on it are actually down to the wear lines. So unless anybody has any major objection to that, I'd recommend that we push that forward.
I agree. It has to be done. If it's down to the wear lines, then you're putting your firefighters in there, you're putting patients in there. You need to have the proper tires.
It was snow season around the corner.
Yeah.
Indeed. It's getting colder every morning. There's been some work on the cleanup at Station 1. As was mentioned, the gear locker was cleared of some gear. There's some gear in there that's 20 years old. It should not be in there. The medical store has been cleaned. Everything's been taken out. The room is cleaned and it's being put back, inventoried. And with the shift officers, I think Dan is working on minimums that we should have in stock. Again, we're finding a lot of things in there that are out of date. So we need to manage that a lot better. And he's working a plan to make that function better than it does. Vehicle disposal. We did find a buyer for the Jeep at Station 2. Got the plow removed. And then we ran into some titling issues with that and some of our other vehicles, which was a bit unanticipated. Jim and Charlie are working on how we resolve that problem, because some of the vehicles are either so old or may have come through the state. We're not entirely sure of the full history. We have no titles for them, so that's slowing that down. But they're going to work on that this week. And hopefully we can move forward with cleaning up some of our excess vehicles up at Station 2. Any questions? Okay. On the new business, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to make the motion that Netherland Fire adopt and commit to the Everyone Goes Home program for firefighter awareness and safety, a program that's been around for at least 6 years, if not longer, and is a vital link in changing the mindset of fire departments away from the, this is the way we've always done it, we don't work that way. So as an organization, they'll provide support and advocacy for us and help in moving forward. I think this is an incredibly important initiative. I wish we'd done it sooner, And I wanted to do it before we really wish we'd done it sooner. As a department, it makes us much more professional. And will help. I think it will help actually address a lot of the internal issues that we have. Does anybody have any questions about that?
I think that it's certainly a great resource. There are a great many fire departments that use this. I think that it, you know, the site and the program can't, you know, be visited by a handful of people. But I think department-wide, we need to adopt this concept, and we're paying attention to the safety, health, and welfare of all of our responders, everybody, from the top down.
Is there a cost associated with this?
Not directly. Obviously, indirectly, safety costs you money.
Well, I'm not against it. I'd like to see more information, though, than... And this is out of debt. You said you were saying this is somebody with the Denver Fire?
So this is a national program, but Denver Fire are fairly active in it. They won one of the awards for implementation last year, I believe, for their health and safety program, which is a part of one of the cornerstones of this program.
So there's a local representative that we have access to?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ian, I looked at this real quick online just now. I got no issues with it. I think this is a fine program. I think there's going to be good resources. In a way, I wish somebody would have brought that to the board's attention when that came out years ago. Maybe you can make an argument that the board should have known about that. But I think it's a good time for it. I think it's a good program, decent resources. I have no issues joining it.
Okay. So I'd like to make the board motion then that we adopt and commit to everyone goes home and start looking into how we implement that.
Second.
Ray?
Yes.
And I'm in favor as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that support. I think it's an important step for us.
Can I jump in for a second?
Yes.
Hey, so I think Ryan somehow missed both mine and Dan's email to the board. So if we have a second, I'd like to read Dan's, and then I can briefly explain what was happening on my side of things.
Is this back to the operational report?
If that's okay. If there's no time, then I understand.
So is this for the operational report?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, yes, go ahead, please.
All right, so this is from Dan. All the medical supplies have been cleaned out of the closet and are in the bay. They are being put back in after being cleaned and inventoried. All expired or extraneous stock is being separated for storage or disposal. All is being entered into a spreadsheet where maximum minimal supply counts will need to be determined. We have decided on the StatPak G3 backup and the G3 breather med bags. I ordered one more G3 backup bag in red. The new color airway kits have been placed on order, and the ones that are not being used in the process are being returned. He says, Charlie is currently working on the current state of our narcotics. Patrick has sent a draft of a standard operating procedure, and he's working to update that. The max minimum on narcotics in the ambulances and backstock has also been sent out for approval. He completed his AAR document for the 283 Alpine Drive and sent to the membership. The AAR is scheduled for September 8th. He inventoried and backed up the radio programming files and software. He's reached out to Scott Whitehead regarding the programming and file standards for getting the APX 7000 programmed in, but have not heard back. Those are the, I believe those are the dual frequency big money radios that we have. And then he started an audit of everyone's medical certifications and when they are due for recertification. And then as far as myself, I've been working on a number of things, including the narcotics handling and our current practices that we have to modify. The other thing that I've been working on, I got the old engine 2 running, the one on the side of station 2. So that runs and drives and can be moved if somebody would please buy it from us. I also spent a bunch of time getting the old plow truck running, got the plow off the plow truck because the new purchaser was just buying the truck alone. So the plow is off of it, and that is also ready to be sold. When engine 1 came back from Keter, it was leaking out of a front axle. Did a little bit of research, talked with them again, determined that they overfilled the axle fluid, and that's been adjusted and doesn't seem to be leaking anymore. But currently it is leaking water. So I will be working on that tomorrow to kind of start looking at that. Dan was going to start that process. We think it's either a tank to pump or a tank refill valve that may be bad. I'm trying to think what else. We've removed the narcotics and the med kits out of 5622. It turns out that our license, our DEA license, doesn't allow for having narcotics at an auxiliary fire station. So those have been removed, and those have been placed in the narcotics boxes in the two ambulances that are at station 1. Currently we have the red command vehicle set up as a quick response vehicle. So meaning it has our monitor, which is also an AED, our ALS and our BLS kits inside that. So if we were to get a call while we were at, I don't know, let's say station 3 or at Ace Hardware or something along those lines, we'd be able to go directly to the scene, not impede any patient care. We'd be able to provide patient care quickly. So I think that's where we're at, in addition to what Ryan was taking care of.
Thank you to all three of you for the work you're putting in. I appreciate it.
Yep. I'll echo that as well.
Thanks, Ray.
As do I, but you knew that. Okay, thank you, Charlie. Next agenda item was website. I've had a lot of comments about our website and transparency and things not being posted on our current website. Our current website is run on very outdated software, which is very unfriendly. And it's very hard to update. And basically looks like it was made in the 90s. Through the Special Districts Association, I found an organization called Streamline. They make websites specifically for special districts. So I had a conversation with them, and they made us this website in about 15 minutes, basically scraped some of the content from our current one. So basically, they would transfer our current website to this service, manage it for us, keep the theme up to date. What is actually particularly nice about the organization, like I said, it's specifically for special districts, is that they tell you all of the things that you should have in your website, maintain transparency, which makes our life a lot easier. They'll tell you all the filing dates you need to know. They'll provide you help and backup where you need it. The website itself is drag and drop in order to make. So it takes, I did some playing with it and it took me 20 minutes to make up a couple of pages. Basically, or to make changes to the website, which is not how it is now. Give me a second. Basically, the bottom line on this is it's through the Special District Association, $100 a month. Based on how long I think it probably takes or would take us to just upload this board meeting, that would pay for itself every month. And if we need to make changes to it, it's just very quick and easy to do. We can train people within the department to do it. Whereas the management system we use at the moment is very clunky.
So Ian, if we can upload the board meetings almost immediately, is that right?
I believe so, yeah. It would certainly be a lot easier than it is now. So we can just drag them into, we can make a section on here for the meetings. And also in meetings, let's see if it shows us.
When you say upload the board meetings, is that just minutes or is that what? Is that the Zoom meeting or what happens when we go back to face-to-face meetings?
So it could be the Zoom meeting, it could be the audio. When we go back to face-to-face meetings, it's my intention that we continue the Zoom meetings anyway. I think that gives us a lot better access. When we go back to face-to-face meetings, whenever that is, it's my intention to continue offering those on Zoom as well. I think that makes it much more accessible. Certainly I've seen more people on these meetings than I ever saw in any of the other board meetings.
I don't mind sprucing up our website at all. I think it's been a point of contention for a while, even myself, but Ian, I think what we ought to focus on is so that we need to post information about our meetings on our website. Our website has not been updated since you guys were sworn in. Still the old directors are on there. And mm-hmm. there has nothing been posted on it as on a transparency notice and on meeting minutes, agendas, etc. I don't claim we did a great job before on that. We did a job, but there's some information on there, but I think we need to focus on making sure that these things are being posted even while we're trying to reconsider or refigure maybe a new portal, a new platform.
We don't have anybody who has the skill to post on our current website. There was only one person who could do that. And he's on administrative leave currently.
I know Ray loves the IT stuff.
He was telling me that only today.
You're definitely barking up the wrong tree there.
Rather than spend hundreds of hours trying to fix our current website, I would much prefer we shifted it to a provider that is geared towards what we do.
I'm sure Jim, the administrator, knows how to post some of that, no?
So how? I asked him the other day when he got back.
How long would it take, rough estimation, to get this website up and running. It seems like it's fairly simple.
Hurry up! Bless you. Their estimate was around about a week to get it all pulled over, I believe. It was a couple of months back when I spoke to them. I've been meaning to get this on the agenda, and I haven't spoken to them. But this also has an easy portal for our membership to sign in, so we can put documents up there, like guidelines, policies, trainings, and any information that we need to get out to them. It doesn't show in this view. I needed to give them some material to put up there.
Ian, if this change in the platform expedites the updating of the information since the election on our website, mm-hmm. then I'm, you know, let's go.
Yeah.
Okay.
A week time frame is not that long. I'd be actually almost shocked if they can get it done in a week, but maybe they know more than we do, right? And I'd be happy if that would be done in a week.
They put this together in 15 minutes. So I was quite impressed. I mean, it's really just one of their templates. And we have the power, if we had the skills, we had
and
the
power. Are we entering into a maintenance contract or, you know, a contract that has them update the site, or are they going to delegate that to us that we can update it if we have the capacity?
They can update it. I think it's so simple that we can update it ourselves. It's not a maintenance contract with them. So the $100 a month is fixed fee, whether they're managing it for you, whether you're managing it. And I assume that their management of it probably has limits. I haven't seen the details of their contract, but I'm sure they'll just only do a certain amount of work. But like I said, this is purely drag and drop. You need no experience in heavy duty coding or HTML. I just think this is the quickest way to get to where we need to be.
Back to the meeting minutes, and if we're recording it and then making the
anybody else having trouble hearing him? Minutes.
Patrick, you're breaking up a little bit, sorry.
What I'm asking, hold on.
So if you turn your video off, probably would.
I want to know if we can actually provide access to the board meeting minutes. So we save it via Zoom and we put it to the web page. Will Jim still have to transcribe meeting minutes? Is that a requirement that he transcribe those if we're providing it electronically?
So the creation of the minutes is a manual process anyway. for the investigation stuff, I've been using or looking at an auto transcription service, which basically runs the cost of 25 cents a minute. It's about 85% accurate, so you just have to run through and clean those up. And then from there, you can reasonably quickly make minutes. But the short answer to your question is, yes, we still have to produce minutes manually.
Yeah, because they have to go on file.
Yeah.
What did you say the cost was?
For the transcription, to do a full transcription, is about 25 cents.
The monthly fee.
$100.
Okay, I just got this feeling that we're just all of a sudden we're hemorrhaging money. I worry about our future.
Well, unfortunately, the vehicle repairs have to happen.
Yeah, I got that. Did we get that contract signed with the HR company?
Yes.
So they are on board now?
Yes, yeah, so they're coming in tomorrow to do an onboarding, to lay down, basically meet the shift officers and understand our requirements and tell us what they will and won't do. Although we
have to
be fairly clear on that. Say again.
Well, to get that done, we're paying overtime for two of them to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know, if we don't understand the IT thing, I guess we don't, but there's a way to understand how much traffic our website gets. Can we find out how much, how many hits we are getting on our website, how people are using it, how people are interacting with it, to make sure that if we spend money on this, that it's a well worth investment?
I don't know. It depends how it's configured. I can probably look at that. One thing I definitely noticed in the last 2 weeks is that I've had a lot of complaints about our current website. It's the short version of putting that. And like I said, it's so difficult to update, which is probably why it has not been updated. It's another one of those management tasks that go astray.
Can I ask a question?
Is
it really difficult to update just basic changing pieces of information, like switching out photos and names of board members, et cetera? Or are we talking about like really updating the format and making it look more modern? Is that the part that's difficult? What's the part that's actually difficult?
On our website, both. I had a look at it yesterday. I've actually used this software before. The corporate that I worked for used it. And even when it's set up totally correctly, it's hard. Ours is not set up in an ideal way. And to be honest with you, I'm terrified to touch it.
So until the end of 2019, minutes were being posted. Who was doing that?
They were not. They were back posted in January, and the chief did that as the result of a number of Cora requests that happened. Okay. So he has the juju on that one. And I don't know how difficult that was to do, but judging on my journey through what was there, harder than it needs to be.
See.
It's basically running on software that's 6 years old, I think, which in itself is another whole other problem. And then, so basically updating that software would take just in doing that is a lot of work. And there are some fairly major content changes that occur in those updates, I know from previous experience.
Okay.
So I guess, board, it's on us. Which way do you want to go?
I'm not against modifying our website. I was just looking at the expenses in my company that we're spending on the website, and we're spending considerably less than $100 a month to maintain it, just to keep it open, to keep it running. So I don't know. Did you get another bid for it, or is this just a one shot kind of thing? It's just one entity that does this.
This is the only one that I've seen that does it. That's directed at special districts. I've used other providers before, like Wix, for instance, which again is fairly easy to use, but you still got to do all of the layout yourself. It doesn't have the governance options in it. And again, there's a whole mountain of time to do that design. We don't have the in-house skills or time to do that.
This is probably one of the items that is not on, on like mission critical priority. I think it's important to keep our website updated. Is that something that we could just table for now and look how the year shakes out, look how our income is going to come together next year and see if there's room for an expenditure like that? But then at the same time, find somebody within our district that could update our current website with the current information.
Sure. We could do that. If anybody out there is comfortable in Drupal 6, I've got a job for you.
Hey, the only thing I would just comment on is that it would be pretty nice to be able to do a lot of this stuff in-house, like adjust calendars and add policies and add upcoming events and things like that, instead of having to go through some other third or fourth party person to accomplish that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because we also get it on our end, like how crappy our website is. And we can't really utilize the features of that a lot of other websites have.
Okay.
So where are we going? Are we going to update what we currently have, find somebody that can, and then look to a better platform at the first of the year?
That would be my recommendation.
Okay. I would prefer to move it along, but I also understand the budget implications and restrictions. I mean, really, we're talking just to put that into context, $400 for the rest of it.
Well, currently, you're watching the budget pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend we do it. I think it's the quickest way to do it. It brings us into compliance quicker. Those would be my two big arguments for doing it.
It certainly would satisfy not only the request of the community, but also the membership too. I mean, that there are several stakeholders here that I think we can all recognize that the old website is needs to be replaced just completely. So $100 through the balance of this year, I agree, we're blowing through money. But if there's money that we can reallocate and do it a budget amendment if we need to and move from another account or line item that isn't being used or can be postponed, I would be okay with $400 to the balance of the year.
Yeah.
But as Henry said, I would really like to see it done in a week if they claim they can. That would be impressive.
OK. Can everybody get behind this, or do we want to table it?
I'll be okay with this, Ian and Patrick.
I mean, obviously, if it doesn't work out, then we can revisit another way to do it. But
for obvious reasons, I think we have to be good. We have to be good stewards of the money of taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
I see a necessity into this. It's not an emergency, but I think since we have it available to us, sure, let's go for that.
Okay.
Was there an initial setup fee?
No.
Well, okay, let's move on. Let's get it done. Okay.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. I'll talk to them tomorrow and get that moving. Interview status, I have no idea what that was in the new business anymore. That's dropped out of my head. On the recruiting, I spoke about that earlier. I will supply the board with the maintenance costs from Ryan. I don't think I got those out to you, so we can't really discuss those. But when we need to start building the budget out, so that's going to be fairly important. So it's good that we've got those to hand. Just roughly speaking, just so you know, and these are just, so this is training and equipment. So a new Structurify recruits just over $6,000. A Wildland recruit, $2,500. And a new EMT is about $3,600. So roughly speaking, about $11,000 for new people is what it costs us. It's got a lot of money when you see that on paper. So we're going to need to have some fairly serious discussions about that. And that's all with new gear and all of the appropriate education.
Can you sometime back in one of the earlier board meetings that you presided over, there was a discussion about a grant that we potentially, that we applied for,
yes. Ability,
and we're waiting for it, that is going to help with expenses of recruiting and retainage.
Yeah, so the recruitment and retention grant would cover all of these costs. So we are very much fingers crossed on that one.
When is there a timeline when we know the results of that application?
I think it should have been by now, but Ryan said we hadn't heard anything back one way or the other.
I kind of thought
I assume that that's COVID. Sorry, Ray. I spoke over you. What was your comment?
Sorry.
So did you have a comment there? I spoke over you.
I kind of semi-remembered having the feeling that that was almost a given grant.
Not a given grant, but it didn't really cost us anything if we get it compared to what it brings for us.
Well, I guess rather than saying given, that it was a sure thing.
No, sadly, no grant's a sure thing.
Okay, so.
But there were some ties to that. I mean, there were some ties attached to that grant. I can remember what we put in our application, but there was a fair amount of volunteers that we said we would hire with this grant money.
Yeah, so we placed some targets on that, which I think was 10 a year, or maybe 10 in the first year, 20 in the second year.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But all of the equipment costs are free, and we had to fund for the coordinator post. It was around $14,000, I seem to recall, which was like the tax costs or the FPPA costs.
As if this grant comes through and we get this grant awarded, then I think this is kind of a moot discussion about these 10
yes.
the cost of
yes.
the recurs. So would you just keep us updated on that, of what the process is?
I will do. Ryan pretty much looks at grants every shift cycle. So he'll let us know as soon as there's any movement on any of those.
Hey, I just want to kind of put a bug in your guys' ears. We're kind of in dire straits when it comes to new recruits equipment. I mean, we really have nothing to provide new recruits. So if we have the 10 people who are ready to onboard, you guys really need to figure out how we're going to budget their equipment, because the stuff that we have left is pretty crappy. And then the idea that we're kind of robbing from some of our current members or our reserve members to provide equipment for recruits is kind of a pretty awful thing as well.
Yes. Don't have an answer for you on that one, unfortunately, at the moment.
But it's, you know, it's hard enough for us to beg volunteers to come and join us on calls. But when we start, you know, pillaging their equipment because, you know, maybe they haven't made some standards in a month or whatever, you know, and we're like, oh, well, we haven't seen them in a couple of weeks, or like grab their bunker coat. I mean, honestly, that's pretty crappy. So we really have to put our minds together. If we're really talking about safety, we got to figure, I mean, we have to start somewhere. I mean, we really got to get people's gear up to par.
So the 10 applicants that we have right now, we don't have any gear, or we have very little gear.
It's not good. You know, if we have any gear, you know, we emptied that, or Ryan emptied that closet, spent a lot of time doing that, sorting through, you know, gear that was probably around when Ray started.
No, that stuff is gone.
I beg to differ, Ray.
Coats and long boots.
Well, that sounds true.
But anyway, I mean, what I can tell you is that my new gear is 7 years old. And so, you know, and I have, I guess, what would be considered some of the best gear that we have. So we really need to figure out what we're doing for gear replacement, and how we're going to bring on 10 people. There's just no way.
This gear that you say 7 years old, wasn't that, is that how long that was grant gear, right?
It sure was. Yep. Ryan got that. And then he also got the SCBA grant. But, you know, like I said, you know, I think at a max, and Patrick, you can correct me, a max 10 years on gear. So I think we had a couple, there was, I think, like maybe a few other people that got gear newer than me. But, you know, 10 years is the max.
Right.
So if we're going to, you know, go with everyone goes home, we have to figure out how we're going to do this gear. And we're talking 20 to 30 sets. You know, so I mean, that's a huge nut right there.
It is not unusual that special districts like ours, you know, deal with some of these expenses if grants don't come through for us, but deal with those expenses. We are another bond issue. It is not a preferred method of doing business, But if there are true expenditures on I would consider that almost capital improvements, then, you know, that's a discussion we may have to have in the future.
I understand. I think, you know, we can only ask for so many bonds. You know, I think we need to start looking at, you know, we have to figure out a plan. I mean, this is not my forte, obviously, but, you know, I think we're going to have to figure out a replacement plan for the future, because this is just going to continue.
Now, coming full circle, we talked about business cases last meeting and writing business cases, and that's why this is a good example of why you forecast into the future. And so if we were hypothetically writing a business case to buy 10 sets of bunker gear, it's just not the one-time expense of buying the bunker gear. Then we need to actually forecast out what's it going to cost to replace the 10 sets of bunker gear 10 years from now, and then fund that account for the next 10 years to replace it at that. Unfortunately, when we use something like CPI to forecast, that everything that's painted red or is deemed fire service related actually trends a little above CPI, closer to 4.5% to 5%. So that's the importance of, you know, when we buy something, we have to look at how long is it meant to last? How long would industry standard, NFPA standards say you're supposed to make it last? What's the useful life of it? And can we, over the useful life, fund it so that when we get to that end, we can pay cash?
So, but realistically, we're not talking 10 cents, we're talking 30.
Yeah, but you know that, I think how many, I guess you won't know this offhand, but
done in stages.
Right, they were purchased in stages. If Charlie's is 7 years old, let's figure out how many we have, how many sets that are 7 years old, and what are we gonna have to replace in 3 more years, and at least start funding those sets for the next 3 years so we can pay cash for it and not necessarily have to ask for a bond issue. But items like that, it would be worthwhile certainly trying to fund an ongoing replacement as best we can. Obviously, there's all kinds of funding that we have to do for capital and program expenses, but so if next year we're going into buying 10 sets of gear, we also have to look at replacing so many sets in future years.
What is the chief's opinion on this?
Sorry, on what?
I've never heard anything talked about with that, honestly, Henry. You know, we just kind of keep picking at what we got in the closet. But, you know, it's pretty terrifying seeing some of the gear that we've had in the closet. So, you know, if we're revamping our safety standards, you know, this is just something that you guys are going to have to, like Patrick said, you're going to have to forecast what it's going to take to continue.
I mean, in a way, I would certainly want Chief Durr's opinion on this to see what his thoughts are on this and how he would manage and coordinate that that replacement and manage the cost.
In the meantime, can you guys provide some sort of spread list of a spreadsheet of how many sets of gear you bought over the last decade so that we can at least have an understanding, and that would certainly help Rick figure out how we want to replace things. And it would be nice to know, you know, we've got 20 sets that need to be replaced in 3 years. Is there a way you guys can give us dates and the gear in service when they're going to be reaching their 10-year mark?
Yeah, I'm sure we can figure that out, because I believe all the gear that we've bought within the last, well, I guess it would be 7 years, was all grant funded. So Ryan should have records of at least how many, you know, how many sets of bunker gear. And I want to say off the top of my head, I think we got 20 initially.
So this gear is 7 years old now, is our newest stuff?
No. Oh, so I believe there was a grant, and I think it stretched over a couple years, Ray. Mine is the oldest of the new stuff. But I believe that would also fall into Abramson and Rick and Kate Durr, Bretlin, and, Ryan and a handful of other people. Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally doable. I don't think that's going to be a big problem. If worst case scenario, we just need to go through each person's gear and just, you know, write down the age of it. But I think the newest of stuff that we have is 5 years old.
Have we changed anything in policy that requires you guys now, Charlie, to run EMS calls in bunker gear as well, or is that still, that is not the case, right?
No, unless it's a car crash, essentially, or, you know, a structure fire, or I don't know, a bomb explosion or something along those lines. We're generally just a typical EMS call. We're just running in street clothes or our uniforms.
Right. And this is the difficulty for a board to kind of comprehend the consequences, because the majority of our calls most likely are still going to be medical calls where we do not take any of the gear out. And then there's the calls where we use the gears. And so it becomes a conversation about safety and sort of the, it's not a risk benefit analysis, but you know what I'm saying, right? We buy hundreds of thousands of dollars of new gear and we use it a very limited amount of time. But of course, when we need it, we need it.
Yeah. But the problem is, you know, gear evolves, it gets safer. The materials break down, and all this stuff, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, brand new or 10 years old, you know, the gear evolves. And so we're trying to stay with the safest practices. That's a big deal, right?
Right. I think I would support Patrick's request to get more information on the gear, kind of worry the stuff.
So we don't want everybody to have, you know, like new people have some ratty gear, no problem.
Where'd he go?
So I think you guys ended up talking over each other a little bit there.
Possibly then. What I said is I would support Patrick's idea of generating that inventory of what we have, what age it is, what shape it is. And then I think we as a board, I think we have a better way to determine what we need to spend immediately and what we need to spend in the short term, 2 to 5 years.
Do we know, have any idea what the going rate is for a full set?
I just happens I did. I think it comes in around about, comes to the top. Just over about $5,100.
A little bit off topic with bunker gear. You have that up in the spreadsheet, wildland gear. A lot of our wildland gear can be purchased from GSA. What do we have as far as pricing there?
at $2,400.
I think we could save quite a lot of money if we purchase directly through GSA. I know that a lot of special districts were having a hard time using that. We've helped a few districts negotiate and navigate through the GSA supply cache. But I think we could, off the top of my head, I want to say a yellow Nomex Wildland shirt through GSA was like about $70. And then a pair of green Nomex pants ran like $110. Now the big things are fire shelters. They're about $350. But I think we could actually work towards saving some money there. And I know it's not the high end crew boss pants, but it's what the Forest Service issues their guys and gals.
Yeah.
So we're talking about wildland gear.
Yeah. Because the wildland gear also has a lifespan too.
Yeah. Do we have any idea what that is with ARG stuff? Probably at its
no. Probably.
So I guess without getting too far off base, it would be good to, you know, the big ticket items, obviously, are the bunker gear. And like Henry said, you know, most firefighters nationwide are going to run 70 to 80% EMS calls. And, you know, your bunker gear is, in some cases, for some places, it'll become outdated and look almost new. And that's really tough to see that, but at the same time, as Henry said, when you need it, you need it. You can't, you know, there's no way around it. So I guess I would like to know how many sets are coming up for replacement almost immediately in the next 3 years. If Charlie has the oldest of the new stuff and it's 7 years old, how many sets of gear fall into that? We can start looking at potentially setting some money aside each year for the next 3 years and see if that's even reasonable to try to do it that way. But certainly provide Rick with those numbers too, so that he can put some thought into it and maybe he's got another solution.
Well, we need something to start forecasting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can leave that with the shift officers to work on. Let's figure out where we are. I seem to remember we've done a couple of wildland grants in the last 5 years, so some of our wildland stuff will be a lot newer.
We should also.
I'm not so sure about the structure fire stuff.
We should also. Looking at the grant process.
Yes.
Get a feel for what that is.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much Ryan looks at grants at least once a week to see what's out there. So we're fairly up to date in what's going on. And yeah, like we discussed earlier, if we get that recruitment and retention grant, that'd be pretty amazing. That would pay for all of our new equipment. If we don't, we've probably got some planning to do. Okay, I think that's just tabled for future, just so we know that's in the air, something we need to consider.
Well, you're not talking, no, we're looking for further information from the shift captains.
Yes.
We're not really tabling this.
So probably a difference in terminology. I just mean we're leaving it for a future date. Okay, and any other new business? Future business remains future business. Unless anybody has any burning desires to get into that. I believe the 2018 building code adoption is still progressing through Rick Henriksen.
Is that the fire code, Ian?
That's a very good question.
I think the town has...
Because the town is doing building code, I think we were adopting fire code.
I think it's a fire code that we need to at some point adopt to make it equal to the building code, or at least close to.
Yeah.
Building code's going to change next year. Municipalities are already aiming to adopt a more updated code book. So there'll be constant changes over the next few years on that.
Yeah, I'll check with Rick Henriksen, which is which. I got this thing in the back of my mind that one has to happen before the other, and I can't remember which one.
No worries.
Okay, is there any other public comment? I see nothing. This is good. Well, I appreciate all of your comments earlier. Thank you. Any other business from the board? Take that as a note. We are not having a special executive session. Our next meeting will be October the 7th. 2020 at 7 p.m. I hope you can all join us then. I hope we have some news. And I look forward to more discussions. On that note, I would make the motion to adjourn the meeting at 10:01 p.m.
So moved.
Hi.
Okay. Okay, thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Members of the public, thank you for your time. All the members that joined us, thank you. And thank you to all our shift officers for keeping our department operational during these times. I'll talk to you all soon.
You all be safe and have a good night.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Good night.